Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice, where we believe everything is political and all our problems are due to a lack of education. We look into the arts, finance, and humanities to learn the solutions. The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves so the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. I think that makes my next guest today absolutely perfect for us. Please welcome Piedmont Virginia Community College Vice President John Donnelly, Dr. John Donnelly, if you please, who is the Vice President of Student Instruction. I'm going to get this wrong, and you tell me, John.
It's the Vice President of Instruction and Student Services, but you were right on there.
Okay, pretty close anyway. Thank you.
Sure.
So, John, I know it's been a while. Let's, if you don't mind, I think you've been away. Any happy stories to tell about that?
No, I just was able to, in the late fall semester, get away for vacation to South Africa to go on a nice safari. So that was a nice time away, and a nice time to be down in the southern hemisphere when it
yes.
was a bit chilly in the northern one.
Yes. Wow, that's exciting. I knew you were out of the country, but I didn't know you were on safari.
Yes, it was very nice, very interesting.
How different was it from community college life?
Well, I can tell you there's probably some similarities and many differences, but in general it was a nice departure from what I do day in and day out here at the college.
Excellent. Are you glad to be home?
Glad to be home. It's a little bit chilly outside, but spring is right around the corner, I hope.
Yes, I hope so too. It's, you know, we get a day of it here and there. But anyway, we are talking in Charlottesville, Virginia, to Dr. John Donnelly, and a lot has been happening. It was quite a 12 months, the last 12 months at Piedmont Community College. I guess let's start off first, John, with one of my favorite subjects when we get a chance to chat.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need community colleges?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think community colleges have been around in the United States since the early 1900s. Joliet Junior College in Joliet, Illinois, was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're a uniquely American institution, and its sort of mission comes probably out of the 1960s,
mm-hmm.
post-war veterans coming home, who we wanted to provide an education. So we have multiple missions, is what I call it, in community colleges today, and that's those are from getting credits, degrees, and certificates to helping students upgrade their skills. We do non-credit courses, community education, all of those sort of things surrounding into what we call a comprehensive community college.
Mm.
We have many, many missions. But I think one of the unique things about community colleges is that we're open access institutions, and we don't have admissions policies, we don't have SAT scores. We're institutions that allow anyone who can benefit from an education to come, and we give them the education that they need to either transfer to a 4-year degree and move on in that realm, or to get a well-paying job that's going to allow them to live a middle-class lifestyle.
Excellent. So it really is a first step. It allows, as you say, a wide variety of people to, for whatever reason, if a 4-year college is not in their immediate future, But even if it is, it is a segue. I mean, it is an end, an entity in itself, but it is also a segue to either employment in the community or to four-year college. I mean, you can make it work either way, yes?
Yeah, that's correct. I think you know, we are a bit bifurcated in what we offer. The two sort of legs on the stool that we offer are the credit degrees and certificates, and those are the ones where we'll award you the associate degree, and then within that are two really separate but quite equal degrees, and those are the associate degrees. One of them being transfer associate degrees, meaning in that 2-year associate degree, we're going to provide you with the courses and the preparation to be able to go to a 4-year institution and enroll in that institution as a junior, major in what you're going to major in, and then graduate with a baccalaureate degree just as you would have done if you went straight through in the 4-year degree. On the other side of that are degrees and certificates in vocational programs such as nursing, culinary arts, that are preparing students to enter directly into the workforce once they complete that 2-year degree. Those degrees and certificates provide a middle-class lifestyle for those students. So we have students that that go one path or the other, and we think that's a great opportunity for those who can benefit.
Excellent. Tell me, do you have any sort of formal direct link to a 4-year university, or is that more or less up to the student to decide what's next after they finish with you?
Well, we do on the transfer side, and that's within the state of Virginia. We have what's called guaranteed admissions agreements, and what we have entered into the Virginia Community College system, which is the sort of parent organization, if you will, of all 23 community colleges in the state, have entered into agreements with the 15 public institutions here in the state, as well as a lot of private institutions that will say to a student, if you come to the community college, any of the 23 community colleges, and you earn the associate degree, and you achieve a GPA, a grade point average, and depending on the college, they have different GPAs. More selective institutions have higher GPAs, less selective have lower. But if you get the GPA that college requires, you're guaranteed admission into that school, into that college or university.
Excellent.
And it's a great opportunity, because from a parental standpoint, or even if you're an adult student, the tuition at the community college is at least half, sometimes lower, than the tuition at a 4-year institution. So you can do your first 2 years with us, do well, finish your associate degree, get your required GPA, and matriculate, enter into the University of Virginia, Virginia Tech, James Madison University, pay the last 2 years of tuition at those schools, and you have a degree from those schools. Then the degree says the University of Virginia, Virginia Tech. It says James Madison. It doesn't say by way of Piedmont Virginia Community College. So it's a great economical way for families to afford the cost of the higher education, but it's also a second chance, if you will, for the student who isn't as competitive as in high school or just out of high school compared to their peers, but could come here, get a foundation for 2 years, get the degree, and then be very successful in the 4-year institution. So it's a win-win situation all around.
It sounds like it. And especially in times when the economy, you know, it's kind of like the weather lately. It seems up one day and down the next. We don't know.
That's right.
It's quite
That's
a roller coaster
right.
ride. But this, as you say, this isn't just for the kids. People who are older are attending PVCC, yes?
Absolutely. We have a large number of adult students. We have a large number of traditional students, the 18 to 24-year-olds.
Uh-huh.
We're also seeing a large number of students 24 years and older who are coming back, who are looking to go for a baccalaureate degree, but are also looking potentially to be retrained in a more vocational program. You know, for example, our nursing program, many of our nursing students that are currently in the program have baccalaureate degrees, master's degrees, have been employed in other fields and have decided mid-career or late career, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do what I have always loved to do, and that's nursing.
Wow.
And so they'll come back and they'll take a variety of our programs, not just nursing, but other allied health programs, transfer programs, and they're meeting their goals. And so we have students from as young as 16, 17 in high school to students as old as 60 and 70 who are fulfilling their dreams, whatever those are.
You know, I really appreciate this and what is going out of PVCC. Even if, I mean, I like, obviously, if someone chooses, for whatever reason, I want to broaden my horizons. I'd like to make a change. I don't want to stay in the same life pattern I've had, whatever those reasons are. But on the other side of the coin, too, sometimes, especially lately, what one has saved for retirement just isn't what it used to be, and it's excellent. It's so life-saving, really, that that they can turn to an institution like Piedmont Virginia Community College and say, okay, what can I do, because I'm not going to sit home in a rocking chair, don't have that option, may not have wanted it really anyway. So they can come to you and actually learn a whole new career, yes?
That's correct, and I think the other benefit of that is that they can do it in a short period of time.
Yes.
So it's not that you're going back to medical school and you're going to be in medical school for 6 years. You can come back to PVCC and in one semester or two semesters or four semesters get a certificate or a degree that can make you employable in a whole different area, whole different vocation. And so it's not only the opportunity to come back, but it's the affordability of being able to come back at the tuition that we charge, and also the time that it's going to take you to get that credential that you need to go into the field that you're wanting to go into.
Excellent. You know, recently, although this is for I believe public school systems and secondary schools, but I want to ask you about it. There's a whole thing going on for educators between the states of North Carolina and the Commonwealth of Virginia. It seems that as far as I know, there have been actually some lacking in pay raises for university students over a period of time recently, and maybe that's about to change. But because teachers are not being paid, I promise you there's a question in here somewhere, because teachers are not being paid as well in North Carolina, there is Virginia is sort of picking them up and saying, come work with us. I'm just wondering, what sort of job security, how do your current faculty, how do they feel their jobs are secure when so much else is happening in the community? Can you tell us about that?
There's a lot there. I think a couple of things with Piedmont Virginia Community College hires just superstar faculty. I mean, we have faculty who come from business and industry. We have faculty who are scholars in their field. Our faculty oftentimes teach over at the University of Virginia. So when we hire faculty, we hire faculty that are just superstars, as I call them.
Excellent.
and they're superstars in the classroom. And retention is always an issue. You know, you want to retain good faculty members, and so there's two ways of doing that. There's the extrinsic and the intrinsic rewards. And so an intrinsic reward is one that, you know, this is a great place to work. It's a great community to live in.
Mm-hmm.
We have high achieving students, and we have challenging students. We have a diverse population of students who come to us. So from a faculty perspective in the classroom and what they do day in, day out, it's a great opportunity and experience to really engage with a diverse student body and a great place to live in Charlottesville. Now the extrinsic, I guess, would be the salaries, and we are a state entity and a state agency, and so we are dependent on actions of the General Assembly to provide pay raises for our faculty.
Yes.
We had won Governor McDonnell last year in the General Assembly were wonderful in supporting higher education, and they approved a 3% salary increase.
Yes.
And that was the first salary increase in 6 years that state employees received in general, but also our faculty. And so when you couple superstars, faculty members who are just tops of their field, no pay raises for 6 years, it's really hard to retain.
Yes.
And oftentimes they will leave us to go to other states because they can achieve a higher salary in those states. And so the situation you're talking about in North Carolina with public school teachers, we're seeing a bit of that here in Virginia.
Yes.
Because there are other states to the north of us in Maryland, Pennsylvania, that are paying much more than we're paying here. So it's a concern. We try everything that we can to keep our faculty here by providing, of course, a great environment for them to work in, but supporting their professional development activities and really trying to sort of give them an experience here that makes them want to stay. And we're lucky being in Charlottesville that the community here helps in that. But it is an issue. The other side of that is that with enrollments, and if you're familiar with how enrollment patterns work in community colleges, when the economy is down, our enrollments tend to increase and dramatically increase. And
yeah.
So for the last 5 years, when the economy was in such doldrums, we realized huge increases in enrollment. And for every increase in enrollment, of course, that's tuition dollars that we can use to hire new faculty and to create new programs. And now that the economy is sort of coming out of a recession potentially,
mm-hmm.
We're seeing that the enrollment now is flattening. In some places, in some colleges in the state, it's declining. And in places where, in institutions where there's declining enrollment, programs have to be cut. Low-enrolled programs have to be cut. And unfortunately, sometimes that means that faculty are let go because the programs need to be cut because of financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing that. We're lucky in that we're not seeing that. Our enrollment is flat. We're seeing, consistent enrollments from semester to semester, so we're keeping doing what we're doing. Unfortunately, that doesn't allow us to do new things with state money. If we want to have new programs and new faculty, oftentimes we have to look for private funding for that. I think there may be some concern with flattening enrollments and declining enrollments that faculty will be laid off, if you will, because of that. We don't see that here
mm-hmm.
because we do our great financial planning, and of course laying off faculty is the last thing you want to do. Cutting the academic enterprise is the last thing you want to do. You look around peripherally and see where you can cut before you start getting the bone of the academic enterprise.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Charlottesville, and I'm just wondering how much of an ally, or how is Charlottesville and Albemarle County, how are they allies to your mission at Piedmont?
This area is very, very, very interesting. We have, I think one of the ways that the area allies with us is sort of giving direct linkages between our public schools in Charlottesville, Albemarle, Flavanna, Nelson Green, Louisa, and Buckingham, which we serve. We have what's called dual enrollment, and we have faculty teaching in the high school who are providing college courses to qualified students in the high schools. A lot of times those students will go on to four-year schools, but a lot of times those students will come to us. So they've got 15 credits under their belt when they get here, and their time to degree is shortened. That's one aspect of the public school systems. We work a lot with business and industry through our workforce services, which is sort of our non-credit side of the house, which provides training and for businesses, training for people to come to retool, reskill themselves. So we're business and industry will reach out to us quite often and say, hey, we have a need for this training for our employees. Can you provide it? And that's exactly what we do. We have what's called contract training, that we will go into that business and industry, and we will provide for their training needs, and that's through our workforce services. The two biggest employers in Charlottesville, healthcare,
uh-huh.
The UVA Hospital, and then Martha Jefferson. They always have a need for skilled workers. Of course, you probably automatically think it's nurses, and that's a great. You know, we have a pipeline of our nursing graduates. None of our nursing graduates. We graduate about 100 a year. They all have jobs when they finish because of the need.
Yes.
But if there's a new program, if there's something that they need, would they need workers in surgical technology or whatever, they'll come to us and they'll say, we need workers and we need trained people in this. We would like you to create a program for that, and we will help support that. And they help financially with that, which is a great, great opportunity, because oftentimes these programs are very expensive to create with equipment and things along that line. So those are great partnerships. We've got great partnerships with our social service agencies here. There's a lot of effort out there trying to give people education and training that they need to break the cycle of poverty and intergenerational poverty, and we are the provider of that education that's going to get that cycle broken. So long story, Charlottesville Auto Mall is a great place. There's a lot of services out here that we work with, and from the public sector to the private sector, we're engaged with them.
Excellent. We're going to take this is just great, John. But we're going to take a short break now, everyone, for a word from our spoken word talent, Mr. Bernard Hankins. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the Vice President of Piedmont Virginia Community College, Dr. John Donnelly.
I want to say my heart, play my part, make my mark. I want to leave my mark forever, put art together with guilds, weld, melt, and build architecture, carve curves like carpenters and carpe diem, construct structures in stucco, craft columns and coliseums, Les Miserables and mezzanines, mosaics and museums. I want to create craft stones and statues, pristine castles like the Sistine Chapel, the ceiling touched with my acrylic brush inside the basilica. I want to make a masterpiece, weave a tapestry in a monastery with a Catholic priest for all those to see who's coming after me. I want to inspire churches and chapels with tin spires and steeples, Gothic cathedrals, painting the saints on easels and empires. I want to paint a palace with my palette. I want to bring goodness like culinary artists bring food to your palate with bottles of wine. I want to model, design, polish, refine with my talent. I want to say my heart, play my part, make my mark.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is the Vice President of the Piedmont Virginia Community College, Dr. John Donnelly, who is the Vice President of Instruction and Student Services. Did I get it right that time, John?
That's correct.
All right. See, I have been paying attention. I'd like to shift for a bit. I don't know how much you can talk about this. But a few months ago, there was a bomb scare at PVCC, and I have to say, as a news reporter, of course, I was reporting on it and on the phone and talking to people who I know who work at PVCC, faculty members, etc. I was impressed with how quickly the administration got the students off the campus, but I was also impressed that when I called people, faculty members that I know, to ask them what was going on, they were on their way to the campus to be of assistance and to make certain everything was okay. Not one of them was driving away. They were all driving too. And anyway, I don't know where the investigation is or how much you can talk about it, but can you update us as much as you is possible?
Sure. I don't have any information on the investigation. I think I haven't been updated on it, but Alamo County Police Department was working on that investigation to try to figure out where, if they could determine where the call came from. I think, you know, out of what I take from that is how did we do? And
yeah.
And because unfortunately in this day and age, these things are happening more and more, and to be ready is important. And I think I would probably give us a B. Mm. We were certainly, I think things went smoothly. We certainly certainly were in great partnership with the police and fire department who were here. They set up incident command. We were there. We coordinated. We communicated. That went very well. When we were told to evacuate the campus with the students, we had our employees from the buildings and grounds area directing traffic. And I think you're right. Got the students off campus in a very timely manner and in a way from what could have been potential harm, but thank God wasn't.
Yeah.
Now, you know, did we learn some things from that? Sure. I think you see where the deficiencies are in communication with each other, with, you know, how to get students to take it seriously and get out and move, and not sort of, you know, call their friends and sit in classrooms. So, you know, we learned some things. Nothing certain dire at all. I think we did very well with the situation. But of course, we the things that we did learn and the things that we can improve on, we have implemented and put into our plan. And so, if the next event happens, and I hope it doesn't, that we're even more prepared, and I think we'll handle it even more effectively.
Excellent. I asked the question, you know, as you say, these kinds of things and worse seem to be a part of our life. I mean, I used to live in Columbia, Maryland, by the way, and long before my New York years, and was in that mall many times. And it just strikes, you know, it hits you when you hear. And of course, I live very near PVCC now, but I don't know what can be done. I do think, if I may, I do think the stress from what has happened to the economy. Instead of making a long question, I'm going to get right to what I want to ask you. It may seem obvious and rhetorical, but I don't mean it that way. But is not our education system the best preventive perhaps tool we have as a society to give people hope, to give them an avenue to feel the dignity of being able to achieve and to be paid for that achievement? Is that part of the way you need, or all educators in your position need to start looking at their institutions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a philosophical question, and you could argue it either way. I mean, as an educator, I would say, yeah, I think you're essentially right. I think that, you know, through education comes opportunity, comes a lot of benefits in society. You're more likely to vote. You're more likely to not be on welfare. There's a whole lot of societal benefits by being an educated person, and it's just not sort of being prone to violence. I think from all of the incidents that you're seeing around, the one thing that concerns me is the mental health issues.
Yes.
Is that you know, as a society, are we investing in the mental health care that we need for our population? And again, I'm not an expert in this, but the incidents that I've seen that have been, you know, tragic have oftentimes, I think, centered around mental health issues.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's I think where as a society we need to look, and I don't know that education does anything for that, because I think you have some of the most educated people who unfortunately you know, have some mental health issues at times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from the perspective of being an administrator of a community college, you know, you can't predict it, and that's the scary thing. But all you can do is be prepared for it, and know that, and drill, and hope that if something happens like that, that you handle it in a rational way, and you go back on your training of how you're going to handle it, and you go back on the protocols that have been set up on how you'll handle these situations. And those are the foundation of what we're going to do to help mitigate the process. But it's I think any place we go, not just on college campuses, but as you said, in a mall or walking on the street.
Theater, parking lot, yes.
Yeah, I don't know how to, as a society, we tackle that, but I think I would agree with you that education can help, but I think mental health is an area that I think, you know, especially as we've seen in Virginia with Creedeeds and the situation is that's just something that I think we need to talk about and do something with.
I do think it is a political question as well as a societal one. I agree with you. I do think it needs to be addressed. I mean, by it, I mean mental health. The we can't dump all of gun violence at the feet of the mentally ill, but but I do think we have not forever treated mental illness and the need for mental health care with the same level of focus and attention that we do with physical health care. And I think that's a historical truth. And maybe if there can be any kind of silver lining in what's happening lately, in the tragedies that are happening, if suddenly we start thinking, hey, this is part of the body, the mind is obviously part of the body and needs attention and health care. And I mean, for instance, as you mentioned, I know Senator Creedeeds. And knew of his situation with his son prior to the November incident, but something like that, and not that he hasn't been an advocate in favor of mental health care in the past, but now he's asking for specifics that suddenly make another friend, Lieutenant Ronnie Roberts. And he's seemingly on opposite sides because the senator is saying we need to do this to prevent such things as happened to him, and the police saying, well, but we don't have the resources to attend, to stand by that one mental patient and wait for a bed to be available. So it gets, you know, it's a whole ripple effect, and it's not just education, as you say. It is the General Assembly, it's the Governor's Office, it's society in general accepting the fact that, hey, there are people who have issues that are beyond a broken leg or heart disease even, and we need to treat them all equally, I think. Well, but there is a lot that's happening around us, and so I'm glad that we had a chance to chat about it. I'm wondering now to sort of uplift the spirits a little. I understand, I have not met him, but I have met his wife, and I don't know that you know him, there's a new man on campus over there in the theater department. His name is Brad Stoller, I think.
Marat Shaw, yep.
Oh, have you met him and how? Because he was in production, I understand. What was he involved in there?
Sure, he's Brad. Brad is I think came on with us. I want to say it's been probably a year.
Uh-huh.
What he's doing for us is he's coordinating our theater productions. Uh-huh. So you may or may not know that at Piedmont we have a large theater in the Dickinson Building.
Oh yes.
That seats, oh boy, I'm going to get this wrong. I want to say it seats probably 300 or more.
Yes.
And so we have all sorts of opportunities that, you know, in our academic program, we have a theater degree program, a fine arts degree program focusing in on theater. So the academic enterprise will do, you know, we'll put on plays. But we also have outside people who will come in and do plays. And we have partnerships with some of the other theater companies around Live Arts and Play On and others.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Brad does is he coordinates all of that.
Wow.
He reaches out to the community, to the arts community, and says, "Hey, can we partner, and would you, you know, would it be interesting to do a production of X here on campus? So that's his role now. I think he has done some some producing and directing. I don't know that for sure, but his main role is sort of coordinating and getting those productions on campus and out to the larger public.
Excellent. Are you, does PVCC in general and through the drama department, are you interested in developing new works and new audiences? I mean, how?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we have a great facility and a theater, and we are very interested in partnering with other entities to change audiences, bring audiences on, new audiences on campus. I think one of the, from an academic perspective, one of the things that we try to do and almost are insistent in doing is that, you know, if we do a play on campus, let's say it's a partnership with another theater company, we're going to ask that our students be allowed to audition and that the play have parts or roles, I guess, for that students could fill, because we want to utilize our students who are in that program to actually be working with professionals and to do a professional presentation. But also, we've got a lot of talent out here, and our students that may not be in theater that may want that as an extracurricular experience. So we typically don't say, okay, X theater program, come and put your play on. We want to say, come put your play on, and let's try to utilize PVCC students to help enrich that and give them an experience that is unique for them.
Well, you are certainly opening my my mind. I'm taking notes here because there are a couple of things perhaps we will talk about. That's exciting. What tell me about, you know, I'm not changing the subject at all, actually. Larry Hugo, as long as we... Larry did the light design for a production I directed. Initially, I directed its first production, a showcase production in New York City, at the Circle Rep downtown, when no less than Lanford, now I can't think of his last name, Lanford Wilson, was the artistic director there. In any case, and I wanted to say that Larry was exceptional in his lighting design of Nixon's Nixon, which I revised at the request of the Hamner Theater out in Nelson County and did a production there, and he came in and did the lighting. But I ran into him also at PVCC when, as a reporter, I was covering the debates between Robert Hurt and Tom Perriello. So your theater there sees a lot of activity that is a community connected. Tell us about that. That I love that facility.
It's a great facility, and we utilize it for a variety of different activities. Internally, of course, we'll have our convocations of our faculty and staff coming back from fall and spring semesters. We'll have productions, of course, play productions and other dance recitals. Because we have a fine arts program here, an associate degree fine arts program that focuses in the areas of theater, music, and dance on the sort of the performance area. And so all of those students will oftentimes give productions at the end of the semester. You know, it's their capstone. We have a chorus. We have a PVCC chorus here. And they do recitals choral productions once or twice a year. So we use it for that. We'll use it, as you said, for community events. For example, we had the debate that you were talking about of the two candidates. We also have the Richmond Ballet, who comes here every year March during our spring break. They've been coming here for probably 10 years, and they do a great presentation up here, open to the public. And I think one of the really, I guess, beneficial things that I really sort of think is great for our community, not that these other things that I mentioned aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But on once a month, we have what's called Free Movie Friday.
Oh,
and
uh-huh.
These are first-run movies. I say first-run. They're probably not in theaters now, but they're very. It hasn't been a long time since they've been in the theaters.
Gotcha.
And we'll play them for free.
Oh, wow.
And families can come here and see great films that for absolutely free for with their kids, with their families. And for, you know, someone who can't afford to go to the theater, which is becoming much more expensive these days, it's a great opportunity to come and see it. But we love it in the fact that they come on our campus.
Exactly.
And that they see our campus and understand that, and hopefully the kids will say, yeah, this is a great place to go to college. And college becomes something that they become interested in.
Wow, that really is a great story. I have to tell you, I didn't know about the free movies on Fridays. I may be coming over there.
Yeah, I think the public can look on our website.
Let's give some information on how one can get involved one way or another with PVCC. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot on our website. It's www.pvcc.edu, and you can find our programs of study. You can find our class schedule. You can learn how to apply to the college. You can look at our non-credit offerings. And there is a link there for our fine arts and performing season, where if you click on that, it's on the homepage. It'll give you all the plays and presentations and the season and ticket information, and you can actually even sign up for our arts mailing list, which you'll get emails when we have performances coming up.
Fantastic. We don't have much time left, but in a couple of minutes we do have John. Could you tell us a little about the other locations where PVC is involved? And,
sure.
And specifically, I'm interested in the culinary school at the Jefferson School City Center.
Yeah, I think the last probably year and a half for us, one of our strategic initiatives and activities that we've been involved in is opening two new off-campus sites. If you know anything about PVCC, we've been here in the southern part of Albemarle County for a very long time. We serve many different areas, the first one being our furthest north county, which is Greene County. And if you're a resident of Greene County, you know that to get from Greene County or even northern Albemarle to southern Albemarle through down 29 could take you quite a while.
Yes.
So we opened up a center up there with the support of that community to allow those students to have access to higher education, and we've been very successful. The Jefferson School City Center is right in downtown Charlottesville. It's the old Jefferson School. That's a great opportunity. It's a community center with a lot of community partners in it. We were asked to be a part of that, and we're glad to do that. One of the things that it allowed us to do was to start a program that we've wanted to start for a very long time, and that's our culinary arts program. But on the main campus, we didn't have the space, nor did we have the equipment, the money for the equipment, and the moon and the stars came in alignment.
Yes.
And we found a donor who was willing to support us in purchasing the equipment, and then the Jefferson School City Center opened, and we were given, or we were leasing space there that allows us to offer that program, and we have about 50 students enrolled right now. They started in the fall, who are on their way to getting associate degrees in culinary arts.
Fantastic. This is, you know, talk about a community reach. This, it's just fabulous. Well,
absolutely.
That's all the time we have today, but John, it's been great. It always is wonderful to talk to you and find out what's going on in the larger, greater Central Virginia area. Everyone, we've been talking to Dr. John Donnelly, who is the Piedmont Virginia Community College Vice President in charge of instruction and student services. And it's always a pleasure. It's been a roller coaster ride, but he and PVCC keep landing on top, and thanks to their superstar faculty and enrollment of, every age from 16 to 70, it seems. So please at least visit the website of PVCC and find out what's there, because it's fascinating. Thank you so very much, John, for being on the show with us today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. We're going to say goodbye to Dr. Donnelly now, but don't go away. We'll be right back with a panel discussion. This is Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio.
Make my mark. I want to leave my mark forever. Put art together with guilds, weld, melt, and build architecture. Carve curves like carpenters and carpe diem. Construct structures and stucco. Craft columns and coliseums. Les Miserables and mezzanines. Mosaics and museums. I want to create craft stones and statues. Pristine castles like the Sistine Chapel. The ceiling touched with my acrylic brush inside the basilica. I want to make a masterpiece, weave a tapestry in a monastery with a Catholic priest for all those to see who's coming after me. I want to inspire churches and chapels with tin spires and steeples, Gothic cathedrals, painting the saints on easels and empires. I want to paint a palace with my palette. I want to bring goodness like culinary artists bring food to your palate with bottles of wine. I want to model design, polish, refine with my talent.
Welcome back to our panel discussion. The Reasonable Voices in the studio with me today are technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today in our interview, and now for our panel discussion. I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, and what about sustainability, artistic sustainability? How many artists out there? I'll start this off with a quick story. So what else is new? Everybody. Two quick stories, but they're part of the same thing. All my life, I was lucky, I guess, in the sense that in the sixth grade, I knew what I wanted to be. And that didn't change until I was long after the sixth grade. But I started out wanting to be a director and an actor and a singer in that order. And and school teachers were very supportive and whatever until, I guess, high school, and then it was time to do this thing. And then everybody for years said, say it with me, everyone, when are you going to get a real job? And we've all heard that, and I heard it for decades, until, literally, I was on national television. My parents and others did not stop saying, when are you going to get a real job? So, and they were very supportive, but, you go on TV, hey, okay. Now, the second story, I can't remember now, but that's probably good enough to open the discussion. If I sound a little wired this morning on the show, I haven't eaten today, and I'm drinking a lot of black coffee, but I'm happy and I'm upbeat, especially for the people here, and we're talking about the arts. So sustainability is a big subject in Charlottesville, in Virginia, in America. And, oh, I know what the other story was. Way back when the Grand food store, was it a food store? The Grand, they don't know, they're all young here. The Grand food store, I think it was a food store, grocery store, closed, and all those people lost their jobs. My best friend and I from college, he's a conductor, and he too has been fortunate enough, as I have been, to always pursue our career successfully. He said, all those people who kept telling us we should get real jobs, and now the sad thing, and we weren't mocking in any way, but the sad truth was we knew people. That's what it was, Grand, because I happened to be dating the general manager of the Grand grocery store, and that's how I knew the inside story. But here these people who had done what everyone said, gone out and got the 9-to-5, worked their tails off just so they might have a piece of their dream on the weekend or a cocktail party on Friday night, and now that was no longer secure, and that was way back before my New York years, and here we are now in economic times that we have to go. Maybe the 9-to-5 is just not what it used to be, and we're being forced to pursue our dreams.
Well, as I was leaving the house today, I saw this commercial that I've seen a few times now, where New York is offering tax-free for 10 years people who want to move there and start a business.
Oh my God! New York City or New York?
New York City.
Holy smokes!
And there's certain zones that they have designated where you don't have to pay taxes. And I was like, that's incredible. 10 years of tax-free. They said if you have something innovative, something that's going to make jobs, we want it here. And that's what you're saying. As I was watching that commercial, like people are now getting it. Like,
yeah.
The old way is over.
It's over.
There's no more of
get a real job.
Yeah. The real jobs are you have to create a job.
Exactly.
because the only things left is creativity, because the Industrial Revolution mindset is over now.
So how do you and I don't think we should be frightened by that. I think that's a kind of welcome thing, although I know people are going through hard times, and heck, I'm selling off real estate like crazy. So I do understand that, but at the same time, it kind of nudges us into being entrepreneurs, or at the very least pursuing our dreams instead of, you know, have something to fall back on. How many times have we heard that? Michelle.
Yeah, well, I think I think about this topic as it relates to Charlottesville, and there's a lot of local artists around here, and I think there's a lot of entrepreneur hype. You know, there's a lot of startups and young minds wanting to have different companies, and I think that the question can sometimes be, you know, what is going to allow somebody who has a lot of creativity, what's going to afford them the means to do what they hope to do? You know, so thinking about like New York and the tax-free, you know, that's a start. You know, where, but I think that sometimes, because maybe the mindset for so many years is like, you know, when are you going to get a real job? Mm-hmm. There can be less of a willingness, I think, to fund, you know, and especially if it gets to the arts. I mean, We're talking just like literary arts, creative, you know, like visual art, poetry, all of that. I mean, a lot of times there's just this sense of that's extra.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But that's the very thing that is the core of creativity, which mm-hmm. creates the new jobs, which then fuels the market. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think Bernard could tell us a little bit about the bridge and what they're doing for artists here in Charlottesville, which would allow them to be funded, you know, for the work that they do.
And the bridge is, just for those who don't know.
The Bridge is a nonprofit, I believe. I think they're nonprofit. But they are called the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative, and it's recently been handed over to Matthew Slatz, the new director. So one project that they just did is called Community Supported Arts, which they based off of community supported agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas a farm would provide a box of produce and people would pay the farm, and then when your produce is ready, it's like, come pick up your produce. So they said, why don't we do that for art? And I don't know if they're the first ones to come up with it, but they're the first in Virginia to do it. So they took that model and they, you know, had proposals go out and artists applied, like, what would you do to do something that links people in Charlottesville who may not normally buy art or be interested in art with artists?
Mm-hmm.
So it was out of 40 proposals, four of us were picked.
Mm.
And so then they paid us a stipend to do a project. And we each had to create 50 iterations of something. Uh-huh. So I did 50 little lunch pail containers that had a USB drive with a poem on it, and then some little cards that kind of gave the themes of these upcoming performances. And first, I'm actually doing today at 5. So all the people who paid for them, they're going to get to hear me perform for, you know, private performance. And there's one girl, she did a insect book that she made. Another woman makes purses out of old book covers, and she folds them over. Another guy, he creates 3D models on the computer, but then he prints it out, and it actually does embroidery. So people got embroidered 3D models.
Oh, wow.
So basically, Matthew, his whole idea was to really, like, how can you get these artists and people who in the community don't really normally engage, like, bring down the barriers.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So it gives people a way to buy art, and at the same time gives artists a way to make art for them and not have to, like, as we're saying, work the 9-to-5 and then go do something else, you know, after the 9-to-5 job.
Well, and I think what's great about that, too, is that it's not just simply, like, I don't think there's an exchange happening there, you know, like, so it's not just simply, here's some money for your art because, you know, you don't usually make a lot from art, so here's, like, a sympathy money, you know what I'm saying? Not that there's anything wrong with somebody just, you know, being a patron to the arts, which is simply just giving money to the artist to make things, but in this case, there's, like, a real exchange, like, people are putting in, you know, they're going to put in money to receive something for and receive that person's creation, you know. So I think there's a real sense of mercantile exchange happening, which I think the arts lends itself to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you start there, but you go to creating jobs. Mm-hmm. And then you're really actually, I mean, I think it all points to economic growth, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's really a good thing. It's, you know, you're actually creating goods that can be sold. And I think that's something that can be underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all wealth is a result of creativity because all wealth is created. Therefore, without creativity, no wealth is created. What happens is the wealth that already exists is distributed. In a growing world where population is increasing in globalization, if new wealth is not created, then the wealth that already exists from prior creativity will be stretched thin. The standard of living will drop for all, and that can result in civil unrest. So creativity is very, very important. There has never been such a thing as a secure job. There have just been long periods of time in which the jobs that existed were not threatened by outside forces and therefore lasted longer, not because they were innately secure, but because of the nature of the environment that existed at the time. Since that went on for about 100 years, we came up with an idea that there was such thing as a secure job, and there was such thing as being able to have a plan, and there was such a thing as doing 9-to-5 and retiring, and etc. There's nothing wrong with a 9-to-5 format and a retirement format until the society becomes to think that that is secure, that is invincible, and also they start saying that that's real. Because what does one mean when they say real job? They mean secure. Because if I am picking up rocks, it's a job. What does the term real mean in that statement? It's not very clear. But we come to define as real what we are used to. And if we are used to most people doing this format of job, then we come to judge that which is not in line with that format as incorrect. Furthermore, an issue with getting society to understand the value of creativity is that you can't so clearly draw the link between Steve Jobs' calligraphy class and Apple. That relation is not something that I can quote-unquote prove. However, it is most certainly very, very real. Einstein said that the main reason he came up with the theory of special relativity that has had long-term ramifications for all technological advancements since he read the philosopher David Hume. Many people would think that's a waste of time. Einstein said he would have never come up with what he came up with had he not hung out in his book clubs with his friends and read philosophers. My point is that the arts and humanities are very, very important. I think we only think as a society in terms of creativity as painting. We don't see creativity as the engine that is behind all wealth creation because we don't see how it directly links with wealth creation, but it very much does because the people of who participate in art carry it around within them to all of the actions and activities and organizations and what have you that they participate in. But you have to believe in that. And also I would add that you could say, well, there's, 50 people in the calligraphy class, one Steve Jobs. Those 49 other people wasted their time in the calligraphy class. Well, you only need one Steve Jobs to do the calligraphy and create jobs for thousands of people. And it's worth having those other 49 who may not directly use it, although we can't say that for sure because we don't know what they end up doing with the total of their lives. That one person changes the world and thus makes it worth funding and appreciating that calligraphy class or whatever it may be for that one individual who makes the world a better place for all.
I think not terribly long ago I heard on NPR Science Now, Science Today, whatever the name of the show is, but their point was that many scientists got their ideas from books and lately from movies.
Yes.
A couple of scientists on who had seen movies that show all this. They were speaking specifically about the solar system and there being another one, two, or three of them, and that they started to investigate scientifically this possibility because they'd seen so many sci-fi films. And they thought and said very often this stimulates because when a creator of art starts creating, it's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scientist looks at that imagination and wonders, I wonder if that could be true. And then they start to investigate. And so there's a real practical proof of what we're all saying, especially with what Daniel was saying. Michelle and Bernard, I know you know this too, this new thing you're doing at the Bridge, there's a connection with teaching people how to pitch their art? Is that something separate?
Well, it's not directly related to the Bridge, but something Daniel and I have been working on is called Pitchcraft, which is the idea of how do you integrate a creative mindset with the business mindset. And it's even funny we say that nowadays because they're both, I mean, people, just like you were saying about the scientist, the scientist is praised, something Daniel's, you know, that scientist is praised for his curiosity.
Yeah.
But the artist is kind of not, like, oh, you're curious? Go play. You know? Right. The scientist is doing something real over here. But this idea that everybody is a pitch person. If you get up in front of somebody and you have to captivate them with an idea, what is the difference between a stand-up comedian and a business person who has to do that? Mm. Both people in their own right have to captivate your attention with their idea. Mm. And it's just the way that it's done is, you know, specific to that point of view. But if a comedian doesn't know what he's doing, obviously he's not going to make the audience laugh. Mm. And if a business person doesn't know what he's doing, obviously he's not going to get his idea across. So why can't both sides learn from one another?
Yeah.
Especially because everybody is human, so everybody wants to laugh. Everybody uses words, so why not bring in a poet? You know, everybody, to some degree, likes watching films or storytelling. Mm-hmm. So why can't all of these, you know, attributes that come with the package of being comedian, poet, actress, work for a business person? Because otherwise, you're only speaking to, like, a particular part of somebody's brain. Here's my product, buy it. But you have to really... You know, the best commercials make you laugh and make you think a little bit and, you know, make you chuckle and walk away. It's like, maybe I don't want to buy that product, but I remember it. You know, if nothing else, you would remember it.
You know, this reminds me that when I taught acting for TV commercials in New York for many years, of course, first of all, there were actors who came. But as the word got around with how I was teaching it, all of a sudden my classes were half full with attorneys. And with other disciplines over the retired people looking for a second career. But I like that attorneys and others were coming, and I know there was another discipline, I can't remember, that were coming to study on-camera technique for making presentations. Oh, it was businessmen, that's what it was. It was corporate people and attorneys. Mm. But Michelle.
Oh, well, I was thinking about how, you know, a lot of businessmen actually do have their own sort of art form when it comes to negotiation, and they have their own ways of talking with their clients, and they're often very well, you know, very good at what they do because they make sales and they do what they need to do for their company. I think that to the point, I mean, Bernard touched on it, Daniel said it before, but like the idea though that if you do the same thing for when it comes to like pitching an idea, like simply for the sake of like learning. I mean, we get it now with like TED, you know, we get like the TED Talks, we love how people present their ideas and it's become a very popular thing. But it's a kind of a question of like, it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately is how ideas are both the most valuable things and also they cost nothing. Like you could just overhear somebody say something brilliant that changes your life.
Yeah.
That's invaluable. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, they didn't make any money from that, from that ability to share it. I mean, I think that points to the fact that money isn't everything. You know, it's kind of is what allows us to solve problems, and it is part of the economy, and it's not a bad thing, but it's certainly not everything. Mm. You know, but I think that with this whole idea of pitchcraft. So there's the businessman; he does his pitches his own way. There's the comedian, the artist, the poet. But I think what's great about pitchcraft and what I've heard about it, I haven't had the privilege of seeing it yet, but is that it takes the idea of how would a comedian portray his message. You know, like he also has some truth he has to say for the joke to make sense, you know. And how does how would a poet convey their message? And I think all of that can really help one understand how it is a performance, in a sense, to really allow people to understand where you're coming from and really get it.
Mm-hmm.
So pitchcraft is great to do that. It really kind of clearly shows a cross-disciplinary form of communication, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And we'll be getting those videos up hopefully soon on cypherideas.com, cypherideas.com.
I was going to say, let us know where we can find this.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me there's a basic thing, too, that we're saying, and while it may seem to be an insurmountable mountain, we should say it because saying it is the first step to climbing and surmounting it, and that is all of us here today are saying the public at large needs to change or evolve their opinion of what is a real job and their opinion of the artists in that world, because all artists are entrepreneurs, and all entrepreneurs are artists in one form or another. It's a creative process, and there is tremendous artistic creation that influences what we call the real job. Artists are part of the artists are real.
can I throw this in right quick? Well, it's funny that, you know, related to what Michelle is saying about art being portrayed as the extra, like, oh, well, that's nice, like, on the weekend, you want to do that. But why is it that every year at UVA, when they have the valedictory speeches,
yes,
and then they have the commencement address at the actual graduation ceremony, the valedictory speeches are the most liked because they have a celebrity or an athlete.
Yeah,
last spring or fall, Stephen Colbert was there.
Yes, yes.
People came out in the rain rain site to see him.
Right.
And as soon as he was done talking, everybody was leaving. Right. You know, the kid got up and was like, "Oh, I'm the class president." Everybody was like, "Okay, it's funny how people present this idea that this is more important than this, but then the actual tangible evidence shows what people adhere to.
Well, it's happiness, you know. I mean, I've sat around at wonderful times in my life. I have to and looked at all the things I had acquired, and my response to all of it was, yeah, but they're just things. To have someone at your side at the beginning and end of every day, or on a drive on the back roads, that's happiness. A poem that moves you, that's happiness. It's spiritual, and it's the artist who gives us that. It's any creative person, you know. Again, as I think Daniel said, it's not just a paintbrush in your hand. Art is ideas and imagination and creativity that leads to any number of things.
Well, what you just need is a return to the Renaissance man. I mean, Leibniz was doing tests on air pressure as he was turning around and writing the philosophy that he was doing. It's been about, I guess, 180 years that we've had this movement towards specialization and the idea that a person does one task. What we're actually calling for is simply a return to an older way of life, in a way which genius is understood as holistic rather than specialized knowledge. I don't think it's by chance that as we've come to create, in a way, an idol of security, that you have a focus on this kind of specialization. I think also one of the reasons everyone knows that they're supposed to say that money isn't everything, but we act as a society as if money is everything because we're afraid. So we're afraid of, well, what happens if Jimmy, you know, goes out and does painting, or what happens if Steve Jobs takes calligraphy? He could be getting extra credits, and then he's going to waste his potential and never be anyone who ever makes a difference. And what if he goes to India and goes on this bicycle? Oh my goodness, he's going to waste his life. You know, it's that idea of fear. John Foytian, I think, says, the one who fears is not made perfect in love, because fear has to do with torment. So what we need is a more fearless society, and as a society becomes more fearless, it will return to a state of the quote-unquote Renaissance man, and also will be made perfect in love.
Or even feel the fear and do it anyway, which is, you know, the famous book. It's not that life isn't full of challenge and fears, but the point is either you roll over and stay in bed, or you get up and you do the best you can do.
Well, to add, there's a difference between the fear of I see a lion, therefore I'm going to run from it, which is just smart. It would be stupid not to run from the lion. And the fear of if I don't do this thing, then tomorrow something bad's going to happen. That kind of fear, the second, is a sort of faith. You believe in this dreaded thing. That's the sort of fear that we need to do away with, and then direct the other kinds of fears toward our destiny.
Another thing is, you know, speaking of art, I like to take that A and turn it to appreciation. And I think, you know, a lot of class, you know, in school, you used to at least have an art appreciation
class.
That's right,
I remember that.
Hey, you may not be an artist, but you should learn the process. And I think that has to do a lot with what we're saying, because I think it's hilarious when people say, well, you can't become an artist because that doesn't make money. Not realizing that that very attitude is why it does not make money. Like, if you yourself and other people would start to appreciate what art was, then you would actually go see it and pay for it, and money would be made. But people just say, oh, it doesn't make money. Yes, because you're not giving money to it. So there's the problem.
Yeah.
You are part of the problem.
And to that, as much as, you know, with the talk of minimum wage, people don't have no problem with having some artist get up during an open mic and not make a dime, and we don't look at that as sort of a violation of human labor, which says a lot about what we value as a culture.
Mm.
I was also thinking about art and, you know, the fact that it makes life beautiful, and it reminds me a lot of, like, cooking.
Mm-hmm.
and I don't know, I always think about things like the domestic work of life, because it's something that I care to do, and, you know, making a space beautiful, like painting a room, or, you know, picking certain colors or fonts, you know, that, and cooking a good meal versus just like a 5-minute meal. You know, I think that all of those things have a lot of beauty, and they're such a, you know, a daily part of our experiences that, you know, it really does make a big difference, you know, when you are in a space and it feels like a home, you know what I mean, versus feeling just like a room. But I think, you know, that small example that maybe seems unimportant to me is a very important, you know, picture of something much bigger, which is the fact that somebody taking the time to do that, it means that they care, you know, and they care to make a place that a person wants to be in. And I think larger in life, lately I've been contemplating the evils of the world and just despairing, but I think something that makes me hopeful is that we all can make a difference. You know, when you make something beautiful, that's like choosing to be nice to my friend Bernard, you know, instead of being insulting to him, you know. So that seems like, well, how does that have to do with aesthetics and art? It's because it's creative, you know. It takes creativity to overcome sometimes your feelings, or overcome nothing, just doing nothing and doing something positive, you know, or instead of taking creation and going in a destructive direction, taking creativity and going in a positive direction, and realizing that that has much more value, you know, than almost anything.
Well, I think we probably we've covered a lot and a lot to think about, and it still comes down to us. But respect the artist and respect the artist in you, because we are all creating something every moment with every thought and every feeling and every reaction.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.